man, that brings me back. Southern Blues, the Allman Brothers. You think South, the South, Southern, down South. What goes through your mind?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
No self-respecting Southerner uses instant grits. I take pride in my grits.
Virtually every sound image of the South you heard right there, from NASCAR to Scarlet, from blues to banjo, has taken its place in the national culture, pulled up roots and moved north and west, if not become recognizable, around the world. Author Tracy Thompson knows that South in transported cliches and accents, music and cuisine. She also knows it as someone who grew up in the South. Southerners, she says, particularly from the generation of the 40s, 50s and 60s, may have transcended their troubled history, but many of them still need to know about it.
I am a white Southerner who grew up in the 1960s in the South, and it was just really not possible to come of age during that time and not recognize that the history that you were taught, that you sort of absorbed through your pores, was at variance with what you saw all around you, with the realities and the drama of the civil rights movement. Of course, when you're a kid, you don't think in those terms. You just sort of register a kind of cognitive dissonance. But it stuck with me. And years later, I discovered through a cousin who was doing a family history that I had an ancestor who had been a tenant farmer just south of Atlanta during the Civil War, who had actually been a Unionist, who had refused to fight for the Confederacy and who was eventually run out of the state. And it just sort of clicked for me. I'm thinking, you know, I need to go back and make sense of where I came from.
How close were you when you grew up to some of the worst sort of moments of history that we understand in the South, the lynchings, the sense of intolerance, the culture of violence that so characterized the some aspects of the Jim Crow period and the civil rights period afterwards?
There was no violence. Atlanta prided itself on being the city too busy to hate. That's not to say there wasn't deep racism. As far as lynching, that was a subject that was deeply, deeply secret. We knew that such things existed, but they certainly hadn't happened in our neighborhood. And in fact, one of the most horrendous lynchings in the history of lynching happened 20 miles down the road from where I grew up. But that was not something I learned until I was an adult. Mostly the society that I grew up in was a very polite society where people were treated with courtesy no matter what their skin color was, but it was deeply racist in its assumptions and in its institutions. And it was just something I took for granted like everybody else.
If you visit the South and spend time in the South and read Faulkner as an example, you get a sense that the South prides itself on a long historical view, but that exists alongside a sense of denial as well. Where are the gaps in the history in the South, a place that seems to value history so much?
The South values history, but only particular types of history. The South has got an amazing record of distorting history and whitewashing and burying parts of history. And that's the part of the South that fascinates me the most, because it's the part that's real. For instance, the often repeated assertion that the South fought in the Civil War to defend the principle of states' rights. That goes directly in opposition to what the Confederacy's own leaders said at the time. And yet, you can still get into a very spirited argument with people about that to this day.
In this book, The New Mind of the South, you describe a lot of the changes that have taken place over the last 50 years, and many of the most powerful visuals that you give us are about your experience of the rural South and how it's changed.
Yeah.
Explain.
Southern values, I think, in essence, have to do with a sense of extended kin networks in community. I think that is equally true for white and black Southerners, and it's a deeply felt value. And that was rooted in the agrarian South, because the South was agrarian up until pretty much 1950 or so. So the agrarian South is what you think of when you think of the South. It's the stereotypical picture of the South. And yet the agrarian South today is kind of a no man's land. It's industrial farming has taken over vast tracts of the South. Other parts of it are simply depopulated. People can't afford to live there, or if they do live there, they are very, very poor, or very old, or very sick, or all three. So it's really kind of haunting. You can drive through parts of the Mississippi Delta, or any place in the South for that matter, you can find these little ghost towns that are kind of a silent testimony to a past that was once very thriving, where communities lived, and they're just not there anymore.
Looking at the cities in the South, I mean, with exceptions, obvious exceptions like New Orleans, Savannah, Georgia, Charleston, South Carolina, there's a kind of generic quality to some of the cities in the New South. And I'm wondering if you would say that the South has lost the sense of what makes it special as it's become a more generic identity associated with America.
Yes and no. If you walk around in downtown Atlanta today, you are not likely to feel like you're in a very southern place. But if you step back and you take a look at a map of Atlanta, you can still see the imprint of racial segregation. You can see the effects of the return migration of the black middle class when so many black southerners left the region, and so many of them are now coming back. You can also see things like the lack of public space in the South. The South has not got a whole lot of parks or neighborhood taverns or whatever that you would find in other places like the Midwest or New England. And that has directly to do with Southern culture and the fact that you couldn't have public space in a segregated society. The whole world belonged to white people.
Finally, politics in Washington has always been well representing the South. I mean, it seems if you're talking about the Southern presidents, Southern control of the Senate during much of the 20th century, the South has been pretty well represented in powerful positions in Washington, D.C. Do you sense that the South has really benefited from that in any way?
Well, I guess that would depend on one's politics, wouldn't it? I think that the South's political domination in some ways is waning only in the sense that conservative, white, male, Republican domination looks not to be in such good shape anymore. I think that we're hearing the last gasp of some brands of Southern conservatism, but it's going to take a while for all of this to happen.
Next Southern president of the United States will be a Latino, in your view?
Or maybe a woman. I don't know. And, you know, for all I know, it'll be Nikki Haley or somebody, you know, who's can claim immigrant ancestry. It's going to be interesting. That's the thing that's fascinating about the South. It is always changing.
Tracy Thompson is the author of The New Mind of the South. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
From a changing South, changing now for much more than a century, to the characteristics that make your city unique, listen to this, Oklahoma City. Oklahoma has all the topographical landscapes seen in the U.S. in one state, prairie, sand, dunes, swamp, high plateau, mountains, western and eastern, and we have the best sunsets, especially during harvest. Thanks to Mark James in OKC. We also have Kevin Durant. What makes your city unique? 877-8-MY-TAKE or post to thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway. Take a solo now, John.
Come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.